Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Today's guest is Lisa Methurst. Lisa has extensive experience in the physical workplace, having spent time across the London design and build market, having focused on workplace strategy over the past 20 years. There was a real driver for inviting Lisa onto the podcast today, as all of our guests to date have spoken in depth about the role of the workplace for today's working world. We feel there's nobody better placed to explore this topic than Lisa himself. Welcome.
Morning. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Alice.
Nice to see you. We always start every podcast by discussing what the weird work moment of our respective weeks were. So, Dan, why don't you go ahead and share with us what your weird work moment was this week?
So a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that I had won my very first client under my new marketing consultancy. And this week, I've actually lost a proposal, lost a client from proposal stage. So it's, you're very, very transparent here. It's about learning. I'm really learning how to process it, and also the art of the counter proposal as well. So, yeah, it's been a very, very weird week in that sense.
My weird work moment this week relates to some of the things we'll be discussing with Lisa today. I went to a conference, which I don't normally do, but I actually thought, you know, I'm going to get out of the house and go and do something where I'm sort of surrounded by new ideas and different professionals, might learn some things, network, make some new contacts. And I went to it and I got into the room and I probably spent about 20 minutes there before I thought, I have to get out of here. It is so busy. It's so noisy. It's so confusing. I feel like I'm being propositioned by people trying to sell me things, and it just felt really uncomfortable and it just stressed me out. So I went across the road with my colleague and we sat in a very nice pub and had some lunch and had a really productive work discussion, which really just demonstrated how important the physical environment is to our ability to be productive and to think clearly. So yeah. Lisa, how about you? What was your weird work moment of the week?
So we have started a new team, as we're probably going to get into in a minute. And my initial concentration was to try and focus in on the UK market, try and keep it local, not overstretch ourselves. But then I had an approach from a friend of mine through LinkedIn. And he said, I have this a huge opportunity in Istanbul. Please, can you come and see us? We jumped on an airplane, went to see him. And our first transaction on our team is going to be in Istanbul. So there you go. Sarah was thinking that we'd keep it nice and local for our initial projects, but we're not. We're going to Istanbul. So super exciting, but never underestimate the social media aspect and being connected with your colleagues and friends.
Huge congratulations.
Yeah, it is. It's super exciting. Can't wait to get into it.
Great. So rather than ask you to give us a sort of long story of your bio, your professional bio, we instead ask the question, are you where you thought you'd be today? And if so, if not, why?
I am, Alice. I'm happy with where I am. So in terms of where the market has led, what's happened, I think if I roll the clock back 5 years, so 6 years, 2019, we were talking about what I do, and you know, clients were open to conversations, but they would always ask for proof of concept. And proof of concept, of course, was hard to come by. But then we had the pandemic. And of course, we can't really talk about the pandemic anymore. We're told to forget about it. But of course, it was a seismic event that happened that taught us lots of things. And if anything, it was social proof that there are different ways that people can work. There are different platforms, different spaces, and people can work in a more flexible way. So it was a huge proof of concept. And of course, for the last 5 years, people have embraced that. But we have this resistance that's now starting to come back, and which I know we'll get into in the next hour or so. But I'm happy where we are, but there's more to be done. And I think there is a huge potential that people need to, I think, embrace to encourage a different aspect, a different view. And work is weird and is only going to get weirder, but we need to stop pushing against it and embrace it. And that's what we need to encourage people to do.
That's really interesting. I read a stat today from the KPMG 2024 CEO Outlook Report that said the majority of CEOs see a full return to the office in 3 years. And to your point, are we expecting to go back into the office of before COVID? Or in your mind, would there be a complete change in what how that workplace is experienced? And should there be or should there not be?
I mean, I don't know where these stats are coming from. And I mean, I'll be honest, I get super frustrated by it. I'm sure the narrative is correct. Petitions and reports are not lies. I think the frustration I have is that people have not allowed a hybrid working policy, a working out of office policy to be matured and finessed. I think it's fair to say that a lot of organizations across the globe, we went early, 2020, 2021, of course, everybody panicked and we had to roll out some sort of hybrid flexible working policy. And for the most part, we got it wrong. And we hadn't really had time to allow it to mature. And Maslow's law of hierarchy is that we want to have safety and security. And the statisticians have interviewed a C-suite. And I'm going to generalize, but a lot of these people will be broadly of an age where they have progressed through their career and they have worked in a certain way. But there's an element of maturity. They hark back to what they know. And of course, in that moment of, I suppose, panic, when the business is up against it, human behavior is to revert back to what we know, what we trust. And of course, the vista is that when we look back, we can trust the fact that everybody worked in an office and it must work. And therefore, we're not going to allow our hybrid working out of office policies to mature and finesse them, which is hugely frustrating. And if we had done that through evolution, we would still be being pulled around in horse-drawn carts. And that is what I find incredibly infuriating, is that people have quickly gone back to, well, it doesn't work and we're going to get rid of it. And to your point, Alice, the mandate is that people will go back to the office within 3 years, 5 days a week, which we won't. That is a fact. Even before the pandemic, people worked flexibly and office occupancy was only really at 55%, 56% of that time anyway. But we didn't draw conclusions. We didn't highlight it. It was just the way that we worked. It just existed. But now there's this big focus on hybrid policy, working from home. It's brought it to people's attentions. And it's now everybody's talking about it. And we just need to move on from that conversation. Let it settle down. We'll find our cadence and actually let's finesse it and we'll find a happy place.
Do you think that some of those mandates are based on false premises? Because, you know, certainly with the U.S. government kind of mandates around government workers, they're saying basically people are lazy, which makes an assumption that people who are at home are lazy. They're sitting on their sofa, they're watching TV, they're not doing their work. Are there other false premises in your mind that these assumptions about back to the office are based?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Work from home, I think we need to change that. That headline straight away. Let's not call it working from home. Let's call it working out of office. So what's a woo policy? What's your working out of office policy? The generalization again is that people, the moment you talk about home, people have this vision that, well, you're sitting on a sofa, you're in front of the TV, you're loading the washing machine, you're doing things other than work. Now, the reality is that people that are working out of office or in their homes are probably working harder. But I think that people struggle with the word home. We were with a client this week and we were interviewing her, very senior CEO, and she said, there is no way I want my office to look like my home. And in design terms now, of course, we're seeing that the new vista is very much that we want to make it very much residential and softer in terms of the palette, look and feel. But she said, no, home is home, office is office. I don't want to blend the two. And I think that is where we probably find ourselves, is that if we have moved away from home as a narrative and just called it working out of office, people would have embraced the whole concept greater and quicker. Please stop using the headline or the narrative working from home. People will assume the worst. So let's just call it our working out of office policy or working away from the office. Don't use the word home.
Great. Okay. Interesting. So if we then think about what it means to go back into the office, we have working out of home or woo, as you called it. Now we have going back into the office. What does that need to now become in order for us to have a good balance of the two?
Choice, Alice, is very, very simple. People are resisting the mandate. So every newsfeed that we read at the moment, everybody's talking about this mandate about returning to the office, and that headline we talked about a few minutes ago, within 3 years, there'll be a five-day working back in office policy. I think the resistance that we're seeing from the users, per se, people, it's not the fact they don't like the office. The office is not going to die. The office is here to stay. We all accept that and we all embrace that. And of course, I welcome that, given that I work in that arena. By mandating people to come back to the office, we have immediately removed their ability to choose. And this is a thing that we have become used to now in terms of everything that we do, from our personal lives to our working lives, from the holidays that we take, the cars that we buy, the clothes that we purchase. We have an abundance of choice. And the moment somebody removes that from us, we get immediately frustrated. And by mandating that someone comes back into the office, we've removed that ability to choose. When we come into the space, there also needs to be a plethora of choices available to people so that they can, that there has to be an enticement. There has to be an encouragement for me to come into the space, not overlooking the fact that work is still work and there needs to be a functional space for people to undertake their task-based activities. But I want to choose where I sit. I want to choose the type of environment that I work in, who I sit next to, and even the days I come to the space as well. So I think it's all about choosing where we are, where we go, what we do as well.
And then in terms of the actual physical space, you said the pandemic was a proof of concept, which basically showed that any technology that had not yet caught up with our ability to work remotely could very easily catch up. And so therefore now when we go and sit in an office and we sit in front of a screen and we do calls that we could have otherwise done out of office, there probably feels like a little bit of a, why am I doing this? Why am I here? Why did I make the effort? Do you feel that the actual physical office space has to do different things now when people are in the office than it used to do?
I do, yes. So I think the office is an ecosystem and it has to recreate itself as almost like a functional, organic living thing. So I would like to think of the office as a bit of a stage set. And if we could create a flat pack office, it would be amazing. And we could recreate it on a daily basis, then fantastic. Because everybody's needs and wants change on a daily basis. You know, moods, feeling come into it as well. But if we could create an ecosystem that is changeable, fluid, and flexible to then account for people's needs, then fantastic. What I would say is that 65% of what we do in the office is still task-based. So we can't ever overlook the fact that when we arrive at a space, work is work and reality will always prevail. So we need to have functional spaces for people to do their activities. And there's nothing more frustrating than going to an office environment to perhaps get your head down to do a very specific piece of work. Then you're interrupted by noisy colleagues, the phone constantly ringing, people hovering to talk to you. And then you have to then take that work either home, over the weekend, and you're not being effective. So the office has got to be a multitude of things. You know, people talk about it as a learning hub. Of course it is. It is a collaboration space where people will learn, but it also is a activity space for people to perform tasks. What is interesting is that in a early post-pandemic environment, of course, there was a rush to, we've got to create this collaborative environment where people want to come and connect. I'm not entirely sure that that is true. We got into this weird place where we were saying we'll collaborate on demand, which is kind of weird. If you go to any of your colleagues, you know, Dan, Alice, collaborate now, you'd look at me and think, well, that's a bit weird, Lisa, why on earth would I be doing that? I mean, I'll collaborate when I need to, and I'll drop into that space when there's a need to do it, but I'm doing something now very specific and I want to sit here, and then as and when I need it, I'll drop into that space. So let's not overlook that. And in terms of that landscape, task-based activity still prevails and collaboration is a byproduct of tasks that we will do on an ad hoc basis.
One of the things that I've heard in defense of getting people back into the office is the fact that just on a basic level, our economy is tied up in real estate, right? We've got pension funds that are investors in real estate. And there's essentially, we need to keep the real estate working. We can't have it sitting empty. So for those organizations that have a lot of space, first of all, generally speaking, most of them need less space in this modern hybrid world, or do you think there are ways that they can look to repurpose some of that space that still continues to make it as productive and useful as possible?
There are many ways. So you're right. I think what we have is we have major cities where there's vast amounts of real estate and landlords have a product to sell. And of course, there is a narrative that we want to sell this space or lease this space so people occupy it. And there's huge drive for that. And then we've got real estate executives that have taken the spaces that are long-term leases. And if we look at the lease structured deals that we have, certainly within the you know, UK European market, you know, 10, 15 years of sort of length deals. So it's not easy to come out of these spaces unless you are at a lease end, lease break, and to do something with it. I think what's interesting, and I'm going to focus it on London for a minute, but of course there are other major cities around the globe that have experienced this as well, is the donut effect, as we call it. So what happened in the post-pandemic world is that people talked about the loss of revenue within the city of London. Trade was down. Passing retail was down because we didn't have the footfall within the city, which is true. But what happened is that value or that spend actually shifted to other spaces. And if you look at the other towns that surround the city of London, the high street benefited as a result of people moving away. So I think, and with that, of course, that real estate is less expensive outside of the city. To your point, Alice, yes, I think that people could downsize and there are other ways that we could look at it if companies are brave. I mean, I know that's a fantastic word that you two are very big fans of, but I think we just need to be braver and look at what is possible. The hub and spoke model has been around for many, many years. Very few companies have actually really successfully looked at it or actually implemented it. So I think there are other things that we could do. But because there is such a huge amount of real estate in the city centre, it's easy. And that's what the drive is this go back.
I was at a property marketing roundtable earlier in the week, peers from DNB, from real estate, from landlords. There is a mandate for being back in the office, but there's actually not enough space or desks for people to then go into. The recruitment agency who were hosting the roundtable were saying that they're seeing it now, property, most roles are full-time office, banking as well. What happens when there isn't enough space, physical space for the people and desks?
So then we have to take more space, don't we? And so we're in this circular problem. So all of a sudden, real estate executives, well, we don't have enough space. We've now got to take additional space. Oh, I'm caught within 5 years into a 15-year cycle of lease. What do I do? And back to my point a few minutes ago, whereas we haven't really allowed our working out of office policy to mature and finesse, because if we were to invest time in that and invest time in our people, training people how to work effectively away from the space and be trusted, then your real estate could stay as it is. So we could maximize the investment for longer, get a greater return on investment rather than have to procure an additional space. We're just adding cost into the whole cycle all the time. So that's the frustration I have, is that we've not allowed it to mature and get better.
Okay. Your world is at the forefront of, you know, data research. So you, when you go in, you said to research a company's employee base. And interestingly, that same roundtable host have recently released a salary survey, and it's 1,300 people. Salary was the number one driver for a new role, and very close second was hybrid and flexible working. So it's still very much there in the demands of the candidates / employees. And I imagine it's the same in your line of work too. Is that right? And what do you think the future looks like then to let the working out of office settle and mature?
So money makes the world go round, Dan, as we know. It is a harsh reality. And in terms of the employee survey you just talked about there, of course, you know, money is the single biggest motivator, I think, for the majority of people. So most decisions, of course, are made on the financial position of the organization or the property transaction. What unfortunately comes a second at the moment is the human sentiment. And the human sentiment is something we need to focus in on a little bit more to make sure that we could, I don't use the word trust because I'm generalizing a little bit here, but it's about understanding how people are effective in second and third spaces. And that's something we need to get to, is that we don't have to come to the office. What's the value proposition of coming to a space? If someone tells you just to come to it, I don't get it personally. I think there are other ways that people do it, but we need to arrive in an environment where people are afforded that choice to do their best work in their best place, where they can deliver that best piece of work.
You mentioned in discussing the need for that contract or the hybrid working model to evolve is the ability to be able to trust people to do the work that they're supposed to be doing. So it's actually like we're almost suggesting here, I think, or what you're saying is that there's at the moment that that contract between organization and employee is not as strong as it should be when we consider it in the context of people working outside of the office, right? And so you said something about training in terms of helping employees to understand how best to work in those environments. What are the other pieces that you think should be looked at as a solution to strengthen that contract?
Managing people that are out of sight or a disparate workforce is not easy. So how does one communicate with people that are not always around? How do we stay connected? How do we feel part of something? How do we feel part of an ecosystem? How do we feel tribal when we don't see each other on a regular basis? And there are tools and there are ways of doing that. And I think the biggest thing is about an overlap. So provided there is an overlap and people are always, you know, whether it's an hour a day, 2 hours a day, whether it's a period of time, whatever that is, as long as there's an overlap and people can see visible, you know, whether it's on virtual connection, whatever it might be, it doesn't matter, that there is a connection that exists and that forms that trust. People have been used to working in a certain way, and to suddenly change, we don't like change, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. And that's it's a change program that we have to go through, to be honest, is training people to allow that distance that exists between being in a space and being out of the space, so that that if you're not here, it doesn't mean say you're not working.
So it feels to me over the last 10, 15 years, there's been a number of trends that have come and go from workplace design. I'm sure you've been asked about all of them at every step of the way, and it seems like they're cyclical, right? So you suddenly have everybody wanting to do open plan offices, then you have everyone having wanted to go back to traditional offices, or everyone's got foosball tables and beanbag chairs. So what are those big trend shifts that you've seen over the time that you've been doing your work in terms of what clients ask for from a design point of view? And which ones do you think are going to continue to cycle and which are here to stay?
So if we look back to the 60s and the concept of what we call open plan now, or the as it was called then, Bauernwirtschaft, which was a concept that came up in the 60s in Germany, which is where the almost like a town planning in terms of offices design was came about. So very much neighborhoods, organic planning that existed in the design layout. And at the time, we were not ready for that. Really, through German legislation, is that every worker had a right to a wall to bang and a door to slam. So we very quickly evolved, and we went back to the lots of meeting rooms. And then we evolved through the sort of 70s, where we see lots of those cubicles, certainly in North America. That was very common. 80s and 90s, we started to then look back at what we did in the 60s that was happening through that the revolution sort of in Germany. Was about seeing how we could actually have that open concept and open plan concept. And then working, technology allowed us to work away from the office. That was the real driver. So we were able to still stay connected through mobile telephony, then of course through dial-up broadband as it was, and then now dial-up internet and broadband. And then we were able to then take our office away from the space. And then, you know, BlackBerry, iPhone, of course, changed that in a heartbeat. I remember getting my first BlackBerry, and I was super excited to be able to get an email, not on my desktop, but I was actually able to get an email. Then I was walking down the street. I thought it was amazing. How frustrating it is now, isn't it? So what we've seen, I think, as a result of technology, is how the space has evolved and changed. So that has led us to, I suppose, less of those cubicles, less of those desks, to these spaces that embrace technology in the environment as well. What's really, I think, driving change now is, I am going to use the expression resimercial. Now, I know some people like it, some people hate it. So it is very much a Marmite strapline, but it is where we're making spaces a lot softer. And there is very much a concierge feel about the environment, softer palette, more fabric, a lot softer muted tones in the environment. So it does feel more homely. And the corporate feel that we had through the late 90s, early 2000s to where we are now is very much a softer and more home feel. But technology is still going to drive the way that we interact with the space, and where it goes to is going to be super interesting. I think over the next 10 to 15 years, virtual reality will become ever more present. AI will become second nature to what we do. And how will that impact the office space and office design in the future is super interesting to watch. Who knows? We may just paint the walls all green, and we end up just living in these virtual offices that are then surrounded. We've all got headsets on where we connect with people through headsets, and we can then create a green screen behind us to what we want it to be. I don't know. I generalize, but it's super interesting to see what's going to happen. But technology very much is driving how we interact and work with the office design as well.
How many conversations are you having these days with clients about well-being and about the impact of space on employee well-being, stress levels, things like that?
It's very much at the forefront of people's conversations. So the ESG is very much a conversation that is being had, I think, by most C-suite SLTs across the globe. And it is a conversation that people are having in terms of that impact of their people. So what is the wellness conversation, sustainable conversation, and how do we make the environment's impact better on our staff? So I think people are talking about it, and people want to do better things. Where we need to get to is that it becomes second nature and people just embrace it as well. But what can we do in terms of office design to make it more palatable or more embracing for neurodiversity, areas that we need to think about? So we could do a lot more, but people are certainly talking about it, and it is a conversation that we're having very much at the front end of our project conversations.
And so even with the current wider discussion around D&I, EDI, whatever the latest acronym is, top agenda for organizations in terms of their workplaces.
We talked about money makes the world go round, and we do find ourselves in a place where sometimes, not all the time, sometimes money talks louder than sustainability and EDI. And rightly or wrongly, that's a world in which we live. So a project can be set up with the best intentions. And high on the agenda would be sustainability, would be to consider wellness, EDI. But the moment there is a budget and the budget has been exceeded, then there will be some value engineering that needs to take place. And sometimes those best intentions can be very quickly overlooked and redlined. So that's, I think, something that we need to be better at, and we need to perhaps be stronger in our conversations and look at the overall ESG governance to say, well, what are our shareholders thinking? What do our investors think? And how important is it that we're making sure that people are listening and heard, so we can make sure that those policies and best intentions are sustained through the project cycle.
Are you also having conversations related to cost in that way? If you keep your people healthier, they are less likely to go off sick. Therefore, ultimately, the cost that you might save in this budget here, it will be made up later by keeping your people well with clean air quality and good, positive and nice environments to work in.
Yeah. So there's a great report, Alice, by JLL that was done. I mean, it must be a good 10, 15 years old now, which was the 330-300 rule, where JLL did a study on the real estate costs, your utility costs, and your people costs. And the effectiveness that you can have in terms of your real estate was the three number. The principle being is that you can only really have an impact on real estate every 10 to 15 years, depending on the lease cycle. Your utility costs in terms of energy is on an annual basis. So most companies will sign up to energy policies on an annual or biannual basis. But your people costs, which of course are your biggest costs in most organizations, you can have an immediate impact on. So if we invest more in our people, looking at those costs and what it is actually bringing to the organization, they are your biggest cost, but equally your biggest asset. And that's what I think people will overlook, is that if we invest the time in making sure that people are looked after, they have the right facilities, they're doing the right thing, then you'll give something back. That small incentives go a long way. So people feel valued, people want to come to the environment, we look after them, I'm proud of the space, I'm going to give you a little bit more.
So you've just started a new job in a new organization for you. What are you most excited about right now about the potential of that role and what you see as the most exciting opportunities in this space right now?
There's so much. I think I'm looking at Mount Everest at the moment, and And there's a huge mountain to climb. And of course, in my enthusiasm, I want to sprint up the thing, but realizing that it is very much a mission to get to, you know, base camp one, base camp two, and it's going to take time. But it's the exciting thing is that small incremental changes will have a huge impact already. So in terms of the organization that I work at the moment, it's a great organization. We have a global reach, able to operate on a global scale rather than a London-centric position. So that's super exciting. The interesting thing as well, of course, is that there are so many things happening across the globe that we need to learn from. So what's happening in developing markets? So what we're looking at is that the office design community that didn't exist is now existing, and it's actually expanding at some exponential rate. So what we're seeing in terms of the European and Australasian markets, they're quite interesting. So we can actually evolve that and develop that in different regions as well. So there's lots to learn, there's lots to do, and we're super excited to get our teeth into it. So, and it's a mountain to climb, as they say.
That sounds very exciting. I want to ask you a question about workplace in general and why it has been the source of your focus for your entire career. What do you believe to be true about the power of the workplace?
Great question. I think the exciting thing is that it's an ever evolving ecosystem that we plow into. The office, as I said earlier, the office is not going to die. The office is very much like a church, I would say. So it's kind of a weird thing to say, but the church has existed for many thousands of years, and it is a space of safety, a place of trust. And I would liken the office to that to some extent, because relationships are made, friendships are formed, and people spend, you know, a large part of their life coming to work, and that means coming to an office. And you know, we I suppose we love it in some respects, don't we? We love coming to a place. And we need to make sure it's right, and we need to invest time to make sure it's right, because it's a talent attractor. It's your brand as well as a company's organization. It's the way you look after people. It's a home for your people as well. So there are so many things that we need to factor in terms of choosing the right space and designing the right space for organizations. You have to think more broadly rather than cost. Cost is important, as we've talked about. But what am I designing? I'm designing a home for my people. I'm designing a space that's going to embrace culture. So that's why I find it super exciting. It's so many things. It's a different thing on every day.
And so what are some of the consequences of organizations not putting that kind of thinking towards their workplace? Just sort of saying, this is the space. We've provided it. Come and work.
That's an interesting question. And at the risk of people throwing bread at their audio devices, some people will argue that culture is the most important thing. And regardless of where you are, if you've got the strong culture and the right culture, you'll be successful. And you know, that could be a shed, it could be in a camper van, or it could be in the best office. So I don't think the office is the answer to all of those rights. It doesn't tick all the boxes. It is a part of it, undoubtedly, but I think a lot of organizations need to focus in on the culture to make sure you have the right type of people, you have the right type of mindset, you have that trust, empowerment within an organization to succeed. And an office will then supplement that. I don't think an office will necessarily, as I said, tick all those boxes. But we have seen some horrific examples of getting it wrong, where people have either taken too much space and people get lost in that environment. So culture is very quickly eroded to smaller space and people become overcramped, overcrowded. And of course, it embraces or encourages the wrong type of culture as well. So there are, I mean, I won't name names, of course, but we see examples every day where it's not quite right. And people are then looking for almost a magic formulae to get it right. But I think, you know, an office with your culture needs to speak harmoniously together to make sure it's right for that right organization.
Can I ask a more personal question? So,
you can, Dan. Whether I answer it or not, I don't know.
Yeah, but delete. Some of the drivers for the podcast, when we were setting up the podcast and getting it to, you know, types of work is weird now. But around big life decisions, big career decisions, pivoting out of corporate life, changing roles, things like that. And you've recently moved roles. You've made this choice to see out this potentially your final part of your career. other people will potentially be on that path too. And I'm wondering if there's any guidance, advice that you would want to share with people.
Yeah, no, thanks, Sam. That's a great question. I think there's two things that I would say probably made my choice easier, or in fact, why did I want to change? So you're quite right. In the latter stages of my career, being into my 50s now, it was a brave decision. And some people would say, well, you know, maybe even a dangerous decision. But I got to the point where I wanted to, A, give something back and to learn more, to stretch myself. And I think I had arrived in an environment where I wasn't pushing myself to the best of my ability. And I have a thirst for learning. I have a thirst for knowledge, and I want to experience new things, and I want to put my head above the parapet and get shot at. And I won't always get it right, as says, you know, we're not perfect in any way, and I'm not perfect either. But I want the ability to be shot at. I want the ability to, well, okay, I'm going to make a case, and if it's not right, fine. Don't shout at me for getting it wrong, but please praise me for having a go, and then we will get to the point where I want it to be. You know, we're still 50 is not old, is it? I mean, 50 is still very young, really. And I still believe that I've got a lot to give. I've still got, you know, 20 years, I hope, to give something back. But also, I wanted to get to the point where I could mentor more as well and teach. So if I could look back in the next years where I perhaps do hang up my boots, and if I have been able to give back and teach and guide people on this journey, whether it be through mentoring programs, whether it be creating exceptional spaces, storytelling, whatever it is the ability to say, yeah, I gave something back. And that's where I want to be, and that's where I want to find myself now.
Is there something that's really been the red thread for you from your childhood through your career that has driven you, or has been that touchstone that you've continued to go back to, or has been that core skill that's really supported you through everything?
I suppose speaking openly and you know, a little bit of inner Leeson here is that there is a part of me that wants to be liked, and I think we all want to be liked, really, don't we? I think anybody that says they don't care if they're not liked is probably lying. Everybody liked my dad. There was not a bad word said against him, and I would like to hopefully go through my career and not ever be seen as toxic, as the person that, you know, was the as unnecessarily provocative just to be heard, or just to be obstinate. And there's parts of that I take from my father when he was still alive. And it's like, okay, you're fine. So yes, I would like to go through my career and say, yeah, he knows what he's talking about, but he's also a nice chap as well. So I know the nice guy doesn't always win, but okay, you can look back and think, well, yeah, I was firm but fair, and I did it in a nice way. Does that answer the question?
It does. Oh. Thank you so much, Leeson. This has been really interesting and really insightful. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to share before we go?
One of the things we're trying to encourage our clients to do more now is to think about novelty. Think about the gestation between something being exciting and something becoming very boring. So the office environment needs to be fluid, flexible, and functional for a longer period of time. So we can encourage users to come back, create that excitement over the gestation of a lease cycle. So, you know, we're getting a greater return on investment, more bang for our buck over a longer period. So that's what we want. It's only going to get worse, unfortunately, as mature, as interaction with technology becomes greater, our boredom thresholds will become even shorter, regrettably, and that's something we're going to see more and more of.
That's really interesting. I'd not thought about that before. It's fascinating. Well, thank you so much, Leeson. Really, really appreciate you being here. Really appreciate your time. And if people wanted to get in touch with you, find out more about what you do, where could they find you?
So you'll find me. I mean, I have quite a unique name. So just look me up. Find me on Google and LinkedIn. So please do reach out. I'll be more than happy to talk about anything, really. So anything in terms of workplace design, novelty paradox, tap me up.
Fantastic.
We'll pop all your details in the show notes. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you next time.